I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelli? How do you pronounce that, John?
It's Anelio.
Anelio. Oh, okay. His name is John Anelio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds episode something or other.
Yes. And, you know, Patrick, it's funny that you said that the first time I was on, like, a podcast with Tom Merritt, and it was like, they, like, destroyed my name. It's like, Anelio. It was great. It was really funny. But that is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. He is also a Hugo Award winner for the SF Signal website. You can check out his website, atfmb.com. You can follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anelio. I'm a songwriter and a composer, and you can check out my music over at johnanelio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at John Anelio.
And John, just so you understand, I just wrote down the episode number. It's 190. And I always put the little slash to the zero. Do you put the little slash to the zero?
I don't, but I probably should get in the habit of doing it.
Do you put
a
slash to your Z?
No.
No?
I don't. No, I don't. I probably should.
What about
a 7?
When you do a 7, do you put a slash to it?
No, I don't really put slashes through anything, actually. Yeah, I know. I'm slash free for the most part. But I should mention that our guest
Before you do that, I was actually thinking about writing a story about someone who does that with all their little numbers, and I'm just going to call it slash fiction.
That's good, Patrick. You've been sitting on that one for a while, haven't you? I could tell. Our guest today, and we are delighted to be joined by Sarah Monette. She grew up in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and one of the secret cities of the Manhattan Project, and she now lives in a 108-year-old house in the upper Midwest with a great many books, two cats, one grand piano, and one husband. Her PhD diploma is in English literature, and it hangs in the kitchen. She has published more than 50 short stories and has two short story collections out. She's co-written two novels with Elizabeth Baer, a recent guest on the Functional Nerds podcast, and they are working on their third. Her first four novels were published by Ace, and her latest novel, The Goblin Emperor, is published under the pen name Catherine Addison, and it came out from Tor in April. You can visit her online at sarahmonette.com or catherineaddison.com. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
You know, it was interesting. The reason I wanted to get you on the podcast was when Elizabeth was on a few weeks ago, and Elizabeth, I think, tweeted out her appearance on the show, and I think you retweeted it, and I'm like, we should try to get Sarah on. And you were very accommodating. You know, sometimes I ask people on Twitter and they get right back to me, and sometimes they ignore me, and that's fine too when they ignore me. But thank you so much for being gracious enough to join us today. We really do appreciate it. And your book, The Goblin Emperor, which we're going to get into a couple of different things in terms of the book, but it's getting universal praise from what I've read so far. So how is that feeling to see all those nice reviews and stuff out there?
Well, I could lie and say I hate it, but you know I was lying.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. I'm delighted with how many people seem to love the book and how many people seem to be reading the book that I was trying to write. I love it, which doesn't always happen.
Sure.
So it's lovely.
Great. So, you know, what we're going to probably do first, we're going to
I'm sorry, that's a force of chaos.
Oh, that's
on my desk, otherwise known as a cat.
Oh yes. I've heard of those. I've never actually seen one or been around one or experienced one ever.
Well, writers and cats seem to have a special kinship. I feel like three quarters of the writers that I know on Twitter post pictures of their cats, like, on their keyboards and on their lap and in front of their screen. And I wonder why that is. Do you have any explanation for why writers like cats so much?
Many writers also like dogs, to be fair.
Yep. True.
But cats are... she's bonking my monitor in her head. Cats are independent and extremely gregarious both at once, which is nice. They purr, which is nice.
Except when they do it at 3 o'clock in the morning in your face, going, "Hey, let's play."
Yes, I'm hungry.
Yeah.
You should totally get up and get me a snack.
Cats are fun.
Yes, cats are fun. I like living with little predators.
Absolutely.
Even when they bring you a bird and say, "Here, look what I found."
My cats are indoor only. They do not bring me birds. They have killed mice.
Mm. Well, that's their job.
Yes, which I approve of, although...
you wish that they wouldn't bring it to you, yes.
Finding the remains of the mice is not so good.
Well, I've always thought the cats' jobs were to get rid of the small, tiny pests in the house. The spiders, the mice, and the little yappy dogs.
Yes. My cats would certainly be up for that job.
So, John, now that we've turned this into the cat podcast.
Yeah, you're talking cats and writers on the functional website. Now, well, let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And, Sarah, do you have a pick ready for us?
I do.
All right, Sarah, what is your pick this week?
I am listening at the moment to Chris Delmhorst's new album, which is called Blood Test. And it is excellent.
Now, is Chris Delmhorst, I like a lot of folk music myself.
Yes.
Now, is Chris Delmhorst, I might be confusing her with another singer-songwriter. Was she also part of Redbird with
yes.
Jeffrey Polk?
Yes.
Oh, Sarah, you hit upon my favorites there. Because I am a huge Peter Mulvey fan. I worship Peter Mulvey and Jeffrey Polk, too.
Yes.
I really love both of them. I've actually seen Peter Mulvey a couple of times live, and he's amazing.
Well,
and
John, I'm about to make you die of jealousy.
Okay.
I've seen Redbird.
Oh, see, they
yearly, I have seen Redbird.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, and Patrick, you're unfamiliar with these names that we're mentioning. You would like, I know, Patrick, you like a lot of blues and stuff. I mean, this is definitely more folk than blues. There's some hints of blues on some of their records. The Redbird album, so let me explain. The Redbird album is a collaboration between Peter Mulvey, Jeffrey Folcutt, and Chris Delmhorst, who is the singer-songwriter that Sarah picked. She has a brand new album out then right now.
Brand new.
Ooh,
brand
cool.
spanking new.
And why don't you tell us a little bit about the album before I try to school people on folk music?
yeah, I very nearly chose Peter Mulvey's new album, Silver Ladder.
Which I've been listening to that one lately too.
Yeah, no, it was hard, but I love Chris's work, and this is the first new album she's put out in quite first new album of original material she's mm-hmm. put out. In 5 years,
mm-hmm.
Which is actually as long as it's been since I had a novel come out.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel kinship.
Yes.
Okay.
You have the same biorhythms. Yeah.
So who in the background
like
who in the background shouted out 5 years?
That was my husband.
Okay. We have to give credit where credit's due.
Yes.
Yes. so I love her stuff and have been
now,
listening.
With this new album, is it a stripped down? Is it a little more produced? Are there drums and bass? Is it more her and a guitar kind of thing?
There's some production.
Right.
We funded the Kickstarter,
mm-hmm.
and we got along with the studio album. We got the demos.
Cool.
The demos are very stripped down, and
mm-hmm.
I'm still trying to decide which version of which song I like better.
This is a conversation that Patrick and I have a lot because I put music out there and I will often put out the like sort of solo acoustic versions of songs mm-hmm. that I more fully produce, and Patrick will always be like, yeah, the acoustic version's better.
Yep.
So and that feedback, and as an artist, that's always like it's a compliment, but it's also kind of a bummer because you're like, I spent mm-hmm. 6 weeks working on that produced version,
yeah.
and you like the version that I just dashed off in an hour one day. And it's like, why am I doing all this production? What am I? Why bother? Everyone seems to like the script. And and I'm sort of the same way. I like, and actually, Patrick, I was telling you about Peter Mulvey because he put an album out of like sort of his greatest hits from his other albums, just him and his guitar, and that's my favorite album of his. So
yeah.
I'm such a hypocrite with all that.
Well, it's like I've told you before, Stephen Stills Alone is one of my favorite albums because just him and a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I love on the Beatles, What were the three discs or the three sets that they did?
Was it anthologies?
Anthologies, on there is a very rare recording of George Harrison doing While My Guitar Gently Weeps on an acoustic guitar. And that is one of my favorites.
I just love it when that,
because it, to me, that shows your ability as a musician. You know, it's not how produced. It's you and a guitar, and you're in an instrument, and you're just singing and playing, and I love that.
It's also, there's no place to hide. Like, the song has to be great. Like, it has to have a great melody. It has to have great lyrics, and it just has to carry, like, because you can't hide it behind anything, and that's usually when you can point out the flaws of a song, is if you strip it down like that.
And it's like my brother always said, you know, whenever he would have a band, he would talk about electric guitar, and he's like, yeah, if you're in a band and you're playing electric guitar, you can screw shit up and no one ever knows. But if you're sitting there with an acoustic,
it's
you... You know, they're going to hear it. They're going to know it.
He's right in one way for sure. But one of my favorite,
I do apologize, John, to clarify the way he said it was, hey, bro, when you're playing guitar, man, then you're like in a band.
One of my favorite albums by this group is Jeffrey Folcutt's first album, which I think is Miles from the Lightning. I don't know if you have that one, Sarah. But that one's great because that is just him and Peter Mulvey is produced it. But really, I think they recorded it in one of their living rooms. And I think it's just Mike on Jeffrey's voice, Mike on Jeffrey's guitar, Mike on Peter's guitar. And he sang some harmonies with them. And it's awesome.
This Mike guy?
Yeah. And then later on, they did the Redbird. Does Redbird only have one album, or did they have they done more?
They have two because they have the first album, and then they have the Live at Cafe Carp album.
Right. Yeah. So Redbird is Jeffrey Folcutt, Peter Mulvey, and Chris Denhorst, and it's the three of them. And it's all covers. It's like some old folk songs, but some country songs, and but just the three of them singing three part harmonies and playing guitar and playing mandolin. It's great. If you like folk music, you can't go wrong with really anything by any of these three artists and the Redbird album. And it's, well, I'm so happy that you put that up, because it's like, oh, you like that too? I like that too. So that is great. Well, cool. So what's the name of the album again, so people can go and check it out?
Blood Test.
Blood Test
is the name of the album. Chris Delmhorst is the name of the artist.
Yes. Very good. Very cool. Pat, what is your pick this week?
My pick this week is Hydra.
Okay.
And I just, you know, they're a great international organization. They're just trying to help people by bringing, you know, the little guy, the little person, equality and a safe environment to live in. And I just, you know, hail Hydra.
I just, 2 minutes before we started, I'm a little backdated on the episodes of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I watched the one from like 3 weeks ago.
Have to see Captain America too.
I did see Captain. Oh no, I know you really kind of can't continue with S.H.I.E.L.D. until you go see Captain America.
Correct.
Because it's they're really, there's a point where you have to stop watching S.H.I.E.L.D. if you have not seen the Captain America movie. And I did go see the Captain America movie, and I enjoyed that quite a bit too. But yeah, I'm a couple episodes behind on the S.H.I.E.L.D. and I've been enjoying
the thing that annoys me about some of the Marvel movies is specifically Iron Man 2 and Captain America 2. There was a point that annoyed me, which is when I'm sitting in the theater and Gary Shandling comes on, and all of a sudden in my head I hear, this is the theme to Gary Show, the opening theme to Gary Show. Gary called me up and asked me if I'd write his theme song.
Was Gary Shandling in the Thor movie? Did Thor 2 as well?
I don't think he was in Thor. No,
he was definitely in the Captain America movie though. Because I thought that was kind of funny stunt casting. But cool.
Well, he played the guy who was trying to take the Iron Man suit from Tony Stark in Iron Man 2. He was the senator. And then they brought him back in Captain America too.
That's right.
Yeah. So they continuity. Yeah. Continuity.
Yes.
John.
It's good. I forgot about that. Yeah, I know. Cool. Oh, that's very good. Mm-hmm. My pick this week is going to be just to show you a little bit of the range of my musical tastes. I just finished reading Joe Satriani's biography that just came out a couple weeks ago. It's called Strange Beautiful Music. We actually mentioned the book a couple weeks ago on the episode with James L. Sutter, because James L. Sutter has a Joe Satriani guitar. And I said that, oh yeah, that book's coming out and I want to read it. So I bought the book and I read it. And I will recommend it if you are a fan. If you like Joe Satriani, then get the book and you'll enjoy it. If you're not, it's probably a pretty boring book because it's not a Motley Crue-esque, and then we OD'd on heroin, and then it's nothing like that. It's basically like, I like the guitar a lot since the time I'm a kid, and I practiced a lot and still practice a lot. And it's very interesting in his younger days and in the time that he goes from being an unknown into launching his career, because it's kind of an unusual career to be an instrumental rock guitar player and have a career for 25 years doing it. So that part is really interesting. But he basically goes album by album, and he goes behind what went into the making of each album. And that's interesting, but I will even admit by the later albums, it was like, okay, then you went to the studio. And then you did. So if you're a fan, it's worth it. And especially the beginning part, but it's not for everybody. if you're not into it, I wouldn't recommend just picking it up as a read on its own.
Oh, so if you like Joe Satriani, I actually fell asleep while you were talking about it.
So, but if you do like Satriani, go check it out. It's called Strange Beautiful Music, and I liked it very much. So there you go. All right. Well, let's get into it. So, Sarah, I actually, you know, I did some show prep today, so it's good. Yeah, I tried. I'm trying this week, everybody.
See, I'm flashing to Saturday Night Live when the guy is sitting in the audience and Shatner's up there. He's like, yeah, on episode number 274, when you were talking about blah, 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 blah. Come on, yeah, John, no, do it. What page number? Start with the page numbers. Come on, John.
No, it's not that crazy. It's a little more general than that. But when I was doing a little research, and I read a bunch of the, you know, because Sarah's out there promoting her new book, so she's been in our community doing guest posts for different blogs and getting interviewed on different blogs, and so I read up on a couple of the different things that she's been doing, and one of the things that I came across is that right now, in terms of your reading, instead of reading a lot of fiction, you're reading a lot of historical true crime, like stuff about Jack the Ripper and Lizzie Borden. So, where does your interest in that come from? And and has that been something you've been into for a long time, or?
Let's see. I have always been what my mother distressedly referred to as morbid. I'm a horror writer, I think, at heart. Elizabeth Barrett and I talk about this all the time because we both write fantasy, but she at heart is a science fiction writer and I at heart am a horror writer. So we come at it from quite different angles. So I've always been drawn to catastrophes and disasters and murders and things. And then I don't even remember why I started reading about Jack the Ripper, but I started reading about Jack the Ripper. And of course, there's all kinds of books and theories and absolutely whacked out crazy people talking about Jack the Ripper. So it's fun. It's fun to read. It's often you are going, oh my God, this is so insane, but it's fun. And then I branched out gradually into earlier murders and later murders. And at this point, I just have to admit, yes, I'm mostly reading about 19th century true crime for reasons that I don't fully understand.
Well, you know, it's funny. And coming across this, I kind of had a little bit of a chuckle about it because, you know, you mentioned Lizzie Borden and Pretty Boy Floyd. And what's hilarious about that is that those are the names of two 80s hair metal bands, Lizzie Borden and Pretty Boy Floyd. So that was a trend. So after it was, you know, after we had our color animals, you know, like our white snakes and our white lions, then I guess there was a trend where it's like, oh, all the bands have to be named after, you know, mass murderers of a previous era. So, so I'm like, wow, Pretty Boy Floyd and Lizzie Borden. That's crazy. Yes. But, you know, the other, you know, I was gonna ask if that goes into your writing, but, you know, I think maybe a better question is, or is a thought, is like one of the things that I came across reading up about you is sort of this division between researching versus just reading for interest. Like, so rather than just like, oh, I need to write about this, let me research all this. You were talking about how reading and just kind of getting good stuff in your brain and maybe not being so purposeful about it, but just like, this interests me, I'm going to read this now.
Yes, I have never actually researched a story, partly because obviously I write fantasy. I don't I don't have to, I can just make it up. Partly because, and I think this is where I got the habit when I was writing my first couple of books, I was in graduate school. So I was reading all kinds of stuff from all sorts of things that you wouldn't ordinarily read. And a lot of it got into the books, one way or another. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of figured out, oh, well, if I keep throwing interesting stuff into the hopper, interesting stuff will come out.
I think it's a good way to look at it in terms of someone's creativity, because I don't know, if you know, we were talking about all this folk music earlier, and if I was thinking about writing, or if I was just in the process of writing folk music, I probably wouldn't go listen to Peter Mulvey and be like, ooh, what did he do here? And then I'll do that. And it's like, no, I'd probably go and listen to some metal or something. And then, I don't know, the metal would find its way into the, but people probably wouldn't even hear it. You know, it's
right,
because
right.
It's so it's like, just if you, in a lot of ways, if you sort of follow your interests and just, you know, do what you're interested in, read what you're interested in, listen to what appeals to you, and eventually that'll find its way. And it's sort of better, just naturally works its way, rather than like, I'm going to copy this and then I'm going to put it into my book or my music or what have you.
Yes, sir. I want to write a fantasy novel. I will pick a random era of European history and research the heck out of it and then figure out my world. Mm-hmm. That's much less. And, you know, if that works for you, that's great. That's not, it doesn't work for me though. I don't get anywhere if I do that. I get places by reading about Lizzie Borden, and reading about the shootout at the OK Corral, which is actually the shootout near the OK Corral.
Correct.
They weren't in the OK Corral.
they weren't actually in it.
They were in, you know, they were in the vacant lot across the street. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the more stuff you read that you find interesting, the more stuff you have in your head to make interesting stories out of.
Well, and I admire the fact that you have your advanced degrees and your PhD, because I have about 9 credits towards a master's degree in music, and I never completed. I only even started because I'm a music teacher in an elementary school, and at one point in New Jersey, they were like, everyone's got to get their master's, and so I started getting my master's, and they're like, but then we're going to have to pay you more, so don't worry about that.
Never mind.
Never mind, because then we have to pay you to go, and you know what, just forget it. And the reason that I didn't continue with it was because, as much as I love, I don't know, maybe this is a weird independent thing, I don't know if this is the way you are, because I think if you're getting your advanced degrees, you know, it takes so much effort, and you have to really be focused on specific subjects that your professor, or specific topics that your professor is assigning you, and you may be interested in those things, and I certainly was in some of my graduate work. I was interested in some of the topics we were talking about, but maybe at that moment, I wasn't. So it was like I had to write a paper about Debussy, and I like Debussy, and at some points I've been really into Debussy's music, but at that point that I was writing the paper, I'm like, I don't really feel like writing a paper about Debussy now, like I'm more into John Coltrane or whatever the case, right. Like I kind of want to follow my interest, which is not the best way to go about achieving your advanced degrees. Like, you have to really buckle down and kind of work through it, I think.
Yes, you have to do a lot of work that you don't necessarily enjoy. I had to take a seminar on the Romantics, who are some of my least favorite writers in the entire Western canon. I did manage to skip all of the 18th century, which is good because those are my actual least favorite writers. But, you know, it was right. And trying to write the seminar paper was really hard because there was nothing I was interested in that these guys were doing. I finally ended up, my research specialty is Renaissance drama. And I finally ended up writing a paper on Shelley's play, The Cenci, which was never performed. I don't know if it ever has been performed for good reasons. One of which is that it talks about incest, and one of which is that I think it's pretty unperformable. But I had to stretch really hard to find something I could be interested in enough to write 20 pages on.
Well, you know, and speaking of your, like, one of the reasons with your new book, The Goblin Emperor, you know, one of the pitches of it, or the real shorthand for explaining to people, is it's elves and airships. And so those are the two things you're interested in. And I love airships too. And what's, I think there's a lot of people that love airships. Like, what is it about airships that we love so much? Why? I'll read anything with an airship. I mean, I just, well, maybe not, but not everything. But if it's, but I, if there's an airship on the cover of a book, I'm going to look at that book for a little while. What is
I think many of us imprinted on the Goodyear blimp in our childhoods. I think also airships are, I mean, they aren't around anymore. We don't, they're not ordinary. So they're exotic, they're special, they're cool. And I mean, one of the things that I was really interested in doing was saying, and I think one of the things that steampunk has been interested in saying, and of course steampunk and airships, they go together like peanut butter and jelly, is trying to bring technology into a more playful arena. Where you can have fun with, I mean, which is not to say that science fiction does not have fun with technology, because it does. But I think there's something about, there's something very Rube Goldberg-esque about a lot of steampunk technology. So I think that, the gears and the elaborateness and the you know, vacuum tubes and things that look, I don't even know the word I want here, but I mean, there's a feel to the technology in steampunk, and the feel to technology, like the pneumatic tube system in the Imperial Palace in the Goblin Emperor, which I figured I could do that. And I was just, I was gleeful for days because pneumatic tubes, they're awesome. And I don't know entirely what it is, except that it's in one sense, it's saying, you know, we don't have to go to the future to have technology. We've got technology. We know we've got stuff. We've already got stuff. There's stuff all over the place that we could be writing about and investing that kind of coolness in. And I think airships just are one of those places where, also, anyone who has ever seen a hot air balloon just is going to want to read about airships, I think.
I agree. Well, that is
very cool. So what you're saying is steampunk is super popular in Albuquerque.
Well, I think a person could, you know, do some sociological research on that.
and I'm actually very familiar with Renaissance drama. I was at the Ren Fest one year, and the washing wenches were not getting along.
Oh, the drama.
Drama. See, if you notice the way that we work, Sarah, is that, like, I try to ask, you know, relatively interesting questions, and Patrick just writes down little jokes that he can then throw in at the end. That's our podcasting stuff.
I think it's so cute. You think I write them down?
Sarah, anyway, we are unfortunately running out of time. Thank you so much for spending some time. So the new book, Goblin Emperor, it's out through Tor. It's in bookstores. It's ebook available. Yep. It's everywhere. So you have that out right now. I know also Elizabeth Baer mentioned that you guys are working on another book together. Yes. What's the timeline on that? Or are you just like deep into it now and you have no release for that?
We are hoping to have a draft done this year.
Okay.
Which would probably mean we'd be looking at maybe 2016 if we can really get all our ducks lined up, but I don't know for sure.
Cool.
We have to finish it first.
Cool. And do you have any con appearances coming up that listeners can maybe go and check you out at?
I don't have anything scheduled now. I have been having for the past several years health problems that make travel very unpleasant and very difficult. So my con schedule has become almost non-existent. I'm hoping that will change.
Well, let's hope so that you can get out there and meet the fans and everything, because people love this book. So I'm very excited for you. So again, Goblin Emperor, that's out now. So your Website again is Sarah Monette and KatherineAddison.com.
Those will work.
Both those will work. And on Twitter, you are Penny Vixen at Penny Vixen. Cool. So I'm already following Sarah on Twitter, and now I'm just going to bombard her with questions about Peter Mulvey and Chris Delmhorst and Jeffrey Folcott. So get ready for that, everybody. and everyone else should go follow her, too. For me this week, you can check out my music over at johnanilio.com. You can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
April was a month of blog posts for me. So I did a blog post every single day in April. And I got to tell you, there's a lot of quality there. I mean, I threw some great, great shit out there. I can't tell you. So yeah, go check that out. Let's see what else. I am doing two Scrivener classes for Delve Writing. And that's going to be on May 22nd. And then the next Thursday, which I think is the 29th. And those are online classes. The first one is free. And it's going to be a basic Scrivener class. The second one's more advanced. One of the things we're going to talk about in that class is how to create an ebook using Scrivener. That one is actually a charge. If you go to the Delve website, you're going to pay like $45 for that class. If you go to my website and you click the link, it's like $15.
Ooh.
So there's a massive discount by going there. And the folks at Literature and Latte are working with me. And so the people who actually sign up for the class are also going to get a special code that gets them a discount when they go and buy Scrivener.
Neat.
So I want to push people to go and do that and sign up. I did my Scrivener class at the Pikes Peak Writers Convention or conference. And there was standing room only. They were turning people away at the door because everybody just wants to learn about Scrivener, because obviously we all understand as writers that Word sucks.
Yes. Yes. 1,000 times yes.
So the Scrivener thing is pretty cool, and I like to teach people about it and show them how to use it and show writers how to use it. Because the first mistake that every writer I know who tries to switch from Word to Scrivener makes is they try to treat Scrivener like Word, and then they get incredibly frustrated and angry, and they send me, drunk texts at 3 o'clock in the morning going, "I can't figure it out. Why isn't it working?" So don't let that happen to you. Sign up for my classes. Other than that, SF Signal, Hugo nominated again this year for the podcast. Woohoo, thanks.
Congratulations.
Cool. Thank you.
Cool.
Kirk has all that good stuff.
Cool. ATFMB. Right. All right, Sarah, once again, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck with the book. And
thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for coming on. All right, everybody, we'll see you next time.
I look at you all, see the lover that's sleeping, while my guitar gently weeps. I look at the floor and I see it needs sweeping. Still my guitar gently weeps. And when I'm with you, it feels like heaven. You're an angel holding me. Your sweet, sweet loving, it sets me free. And in my wildest imagination, I could never.
'Cause you need to be back in the arms of a good friend. And I need to be back in the arms of a girlfriend. I didn't know nobody, and then I saw you coming my way now. I didn't know. No.
I love my aeroplane, 'cause she got style. I'm a treetop flyer. I'll fly any cargo that you can pay to run. The Bush League pilots, they just can't get the job done. You got to now here I am, half a man standing alone and feeling like I lost my only chance at happiness when I let you go. On a river, push on the shove, it don't mean much. Joker on Jack, match on a fire, cold on ice, it's a dead man's touch. Whisper on a scream, doesn't change a thing, doesn't bring you back. Blue on black. Oh yeah. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. I can be since I found serenity. But you can't take the sky from me.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.